You ever feel like the world just isn't loud enough anymore? Like after everything you've seen and done, the normal pace of life feels flat? That dullness where nothing hits quite the same isn't just in your head, it's chemistry, it's wiring. And for guys like us, it's survival instincts turned inward. And what if I told you that the adrenaline, the chaos, the need to chase danger, it all comes down to one thing. This bar that got raised too high during combat or whatever you might have found yourself in that raised that bar, and now it seems like it's refusing to come back down. Today's guest, Mark Haddad, gets it. He's been there through combat, contracting, crashing hard, and questioning everything. He breaks down how the mind-body-soul system works like a machine, and what to do when your dashboard's been blown out and you're just guessing about what's wrong under the hood. This one's not about necessarily fixing you, it's about helping you understand the machine that you're driving. But before we dive in, make sure you're subscribed to the email newsletter at driveonpodcast.com/subscribe. You'll get my 5 favorite episodes sent straight to your inbox. No fluff, just the best insights to help you drive on. I also want to take a moment to raise awareness for something deeply important to our community, the Global War on Terrorism Memorial Foundation. This organization is working to build a permanent national memorial in Washington, D.C. to honor the service members, families, and civilians impacted by the Global War on Terrorism. This memorial serves as both a tribute to those who served and a way to ensure that their sacrifices are recognized and remembered for generations to come. If you want to learn more or find out how you can support that mission, visit gwattmemorialfoundation.org. Now let's get into today's episode. Hey, Mark, welcome to the show. Really glad to have you here. I'm looking forward to having you share some of your experiences, your insights from your time in the Army, and share a little bit about your book that's out. And yeah, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Scott. Really excited to be here. And yeah, you know, and I looked all over your stuff. I mean, I'm sorry. And wow. Yeah. So.
Yeah, those are two interesting responses there. Yeah. But I do appreciate it. You know, especially, you know, that, you know, given everything that, you know, families like ours have gone through over the last 20 plus years and even further back, you know, that it's not just unique to the Global War on Terrorism. Yeah. It's stuff that goes back, you know, centuries, and, you know, families have to move on, not forget and, you know, anything like that, but you gotta just keep living life. And, yeah. And that's, I think, an important piece. Before we dive too much more into, you know, this type of stuff, would you mind telling us just a little bit about your background, time serving in the Army, and kind of some of the stuff that you experienced, and maybe how that influenced what you're up to now?
Yeah, so I went in 94 and got out in 99. I went to selection in 97, and I was known as a 100 mile an hour guy because I duct taped my foot together to get through it. And so that was kind of interesting. Oh. After I got out, I also had a parachute accident at the end. So it was supposed to be a Hollywood jump that had turned into a full gear jump, and my chute was inside out.
Oh no.
And so I came down, I was looking around, I was like, oh, everything's open. And then I noticed the guy in front of me, I'm passing him. Like, how am I passing him? And I look up again and everything's fine. I looked down, I'm passing the next guy, and we were at like a 1200 foot, you know, exit. So then I bounced my head back and I realized my risers were crossed. And so, I mean, it took a while to bounce back and I was like, oh my God. So then I looked down and there was the ground coming up. I dropped my ruck and I am trying to pull myself up as much as possible like this to kind of just like, you know, so I'm not compressing.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work in a parachute. You just slip to the right. And that's what I did. So I just increased speed and, you know, I had an open fracture in my lower leg. And yeah, that was the end of it for a bit. So fast forward a bit, in 03, I had to get back in. I had a cushy tech job. I was married at the time, no kids, cushy tech job. And I was like, I got to do it. So I went to, when I was living in New Hampshire at the time, I went to the 20th 20th Group, which was in Westover Air Force Base.
Familiar with that?
Probably close by where you were. Yeah,
that's where I went to MEPS.
Oh yeah, okay, yeah. So sorry. So I was doing some time there, trying to get reacclimated and seeing, you know, is it going to make sense bringing now my new wife down to Bragg and then get deployed right away and then all this other stuff, and you know, going from a civilian tech job to back at Bragg.
Yeah.
With a wife who doesn't know anything about that stuff, who doesn't know anyone down there, I mean, you would just be writing it off, right? And at one point, because the docs saw the ankle and all that stuff, they put a big fat stamp on my map on the application, said permanently disqualified. You know, so I'd spent the year doing some stuff, and then that was it. So it kind of carried on a little bit. And then 07, I had a startup, sold it, made some money. And I was like, what am I going to do now? And I was like, all right, well, if I can't go in served, I'm going to go in as a contractor.
Okay.
So while I served, I was in Africa, Panama, did some stuff across the Sub-Saharan desert, right? My language skill sets were French and Arabic. So going back to that place was interesting. So I went to work for State Department. So you probably can guess what are some of the acronyms under there.
Sure.
So we were doing strategic advice, advising, and then what I call battle coaching, which is kind of like kind of going along with them at times, making sure they're doing the right thing. So like some of the units that we were training, like in Burundi, they were going to go fight in Somalia and they were going to get lit up. Like annihilated. They had no idea. These guys, half of them are in galoshes. The other half don't speak French. They're all tribal. It's just a mess over there, right? Mm-hmm. So I did that for about 4 years. Something really nasty happened in my time in Burundi where there was a village that got hit, and we weren't doing any kind of security on that stuff or anything like that, but we were called to go check out what was going on. I don't want to get into the details here. Maybe that'll be a book or a movie or something, but there was some really bad shit that happened with the kids. And I kind of lost it at that time. I was wondering what the hell's going on. Let's go after these guys. You know, you know those moments, you're just filled with anger, man.
Oh, right? Yeah.
When you're fighting, it's all hate. It is all hate. You know, all this movie shit around, oh, you know, save for the, nah. You're gonna die with that. You gotta hate. So we got back to the hooch, and I started thinking, I'm like, what am I doing here? Every time we take out a bad guy, two pop up.
Yeah.
You had Al Shabaab, Hizbul Islam, Boko Haram, all doing stuff in Africa, taking kids, taking girls. I mean, like, it is nonstop. Mm-hmm. And you can leave a village. And the next morning, they might be gone.
Yeah.
And so I was thinking, you know, what am I doing? What is my purpose? And I realized that our human's purpose is to bring up our kids. Now, of course, everyone's got to go through their own path to get to where they want to be. But for me, I realized that the people that I was responsible for were 8,000 miles away. Mm-hmm. And so at that point, I was like, all right, that's it. Went back home, because ultimately, you know, no matter how much I wanted to be out there, you know, it's like that bigger, it's the bigger calling. It's doing the bigger mission. It's saving people. It's, you know, getting rid of bad guys. At the end of the day, your kids don't know that. Yeah. Your kids don't care. They don't even understand. You know, all they know is that dad wasn't there.
That's right. Yeah.
And I didn't want that. I had my time. I tried to go back. I got stopped. Someone was watching over me. And even in Africa, it was kind of interesting. So I went back home. And that mantra kind of stuck to me even in business. And I was just kind of just climbing the corporate ladder, one role after the next, and getting to the point where I was running a software company for North America for, you know, it was a multinational company. And at that point, you know, I always had the old SF Mark sitting here yelling at me, what are you doing selling software? Like, what is this bullshit? You know, get back over there. You know, so it was always self-sabotage. And so the reason why I got to get to that point is that we have that all the time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
We sabotage ourselves, like, all the time. And I help in some like military groups where, you know, some of the guys get, you know, trouble. And you always hear this thing around, well, you know, there's no one to talk to. And then they get triggered by other things. And I got to stop them. Like, triggers, the only one place for a trigger. And that's a gun.
Yeah, right. And,
you know, we have to think about how we acted when we were over there. Just even go back to your first duty station before anything happened, right? When you were there, how did you act? You acted with discipline, you fought, you executed because it was structured. You didn't have to talk to anyone because someone said something to you passing by. You had respect for them, mm-hmm. right?
That's right.
You had respect for someone someone said something to you, you're not going to go car, you know, you're not going to go road rage over them. You know, it was a brotherhood vote because we respected each other. But when you come back here, all of a sudden someone can set you off just because they said something to you. So right. Why do we not have that control? Right. So I'll just pause there, but that's sort of where I ended up.
Yeah. And your point about the self-sabotage, that is 100% true. That happens all the time. And, you know, a lot of guys get maybe addicted to the adrenaline rush or the chaos that comes with deployments and in combat and war and the things that, yeah, you might have a plan, but then that plan goes to shit as soon as you walk outside the wire. After that first bullet flies, that whole plan is gone. And now you have to figure out how do I survive this attack? How do I move on? Can we continue the mission for whatever it was, or do we have to fall back? What do we need to do? Do we need QRF? All these things are going through your head at that point, and it's chaotic. It's a lot of times it's just, quite frankly, crazy. People do this to each other, but you know, when you're in that situation, it's chaos, and some people thrive in the chaos. Like that's when their true colors come out, and they shine a little bit in that chaos. And when they get back to a calm environment, a normal, safe home, loving people around them, and living in a safe neighborhood, it's like, this isn't crazy enough for me. I need to go get drunk and drive 100 miles an hour in my car and create some chaos in my life, right? But that, again, that's self-sabotaging. You know, that's not the thing that you need to be doing.
Yeah, in the... When I go through the chapters, it's the book's A Soul spoke to me, but you know, it's really about the reality of soul, right? You know.
Okay. Yeah.
And for instance, when you're going through selection, or you're going through boot, or you're going through whatever, right? You got to have purpose, or else you're going to quit.
Yeah.
Right. And it's not body strength, and it's not mental strength. I know we talk about that, like in sports, it's all in the game, it's all in the head, you know, that sort of thing. But what happens when you're, you know, when you're getting rained on, and you gotta move? It's not the mind anymore; it's the soul, right? When you're exhausted and you can't run anymore, and you gotta go, that's the soul, right? Think about football games, right? When you go halftime and you're losing, coach is like all up in your ass, right?
Yeah, right.
They're not saying, oh, you gotta think better. I mean, maybe in some cases, but the majority of the situation is, who wants it more?
Yeah.
You got to play with all heart.
Yeah.
Right? They say that stuff, right? So they know. And then at the end of the game, when the team wins, it was like a tie game. It was all the way to the end. What do they say about the team that won? They wanted it more.
They wanted it, yeah.
It was not they fought harder. You know, all things being equal, it's they wanted it more. You know, we see those stories all the time, pushing beyond, you know, even knowledge. You know, when I was in selection, I was whistle while you work during some of the road marches, just to kind of keep myself awake, because all the stars were just shifting on me as I was walking, you know?
Yeah, sure.
So you have to understand that the soul is there, and it does give you that driving compass of where to go. Your mind and your body are just like your machinery right now. Right. In this existence, and I'm not going to talk about religion or spiritual, it's all the same. And science is actually proving that a religion exists. I work in the quantum. I do some quantum computing stuff at my work. You know, I'm in the quantum physics graduate studies. And I tell you what, this is one of the only fields in science where people believe that there is a God, that there is something that is creative stuff, right? Because there's just scaffolding around reality, but we're in this thing right now, right? Mm-hmm. And when you're in it, your mind and your body work together. Your body's the chemistry, it's the radio antenna, stimulus receptor, right? We see with our eyes, smell, hear, etc. Mm-hmm. And then it creates chemistry, oxytocin, serotonin, adrenaline, cortisol, you know, norepinephrine, all these different hormones or chemistry that goes into the body that is then translated by the mind into a feeling, an experience, an emotion. So the soul is the recipient of this. Okay. Now, the reason why I'm telling you this is because when you went to combat the first time, how many people around you froze?
Probably a few. Yeah.
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 And people are, you know, they just can't move. Mm-hmm. And there's other people that thrive. It's not the soul. It's the way that your mind handles the chemistry. And the reason why that's important is because at the end, when we talk about when you come home, it's the same thing.
Okay.
So think about when you were younger, let's flash back when you were younger and you decide to go, you know, now I want to go race car driving, or you want to drive 100 miles an hour. And then that's no longer enough, right? Now you're like, I want to go skydiving.
Yeah.
And you have a friend that goes skydiving, and then they come back and now they just all talk about skydiving all the time. They're trying to get you to go skydiving. And anything else that you do beforehand is dull. Right?
Right.
It's all dull. So the world's dull unless you do this thing. It's like extreme as a drug. Mm-hmm. It's because of the chemistry that we're creating, which is the same mechanism that when people take chemicals like drugs, meth, all that stuff, your body, your mind has to raise this bar so it can handle the chemistry. So think of it like a high jump.
Yeah.
And every time you do this action, this activity, and the chemistry hits, the bar has to go up so you can handle it all. Unless, mm-hmm. or else you're going to freeze.
Okay. Yep.
All right. So the bar keeps going up, and that way it's very hard for the bar to come down.
Okay.
But the bar is easy to go up. Some people who, you know, had trauma, the bar didn't go up and they're screwed for like the rest of the world. Other people that had a severe trauma, the bar gets pushed up unnaturally. And now normal stuff is down here. It's dull.
It's just boring. You know, everyday normal routine type stuff becomes probably almost unbearable to some people.
I mean, think about it, right? You have the dull story. Everything's dull when I come back.
Yeah.
You know, so think about self-sabotage, right? How many times you did a 25-mile road march that turned into a ruck run? Right?
Right.
Now, when you come back, I remember I was at work. People were like, oh, let's go do the Boston Marathon. I was like, what are you talking about, marathon? Let's do 25 miles with a rock rifle in boots.
Right.
I've already done that thing. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, friends say, let's go zip lining in Costa Rica. I said, you know what? You know what I've fucking been doing? And I was like, I don't. Zip lining. Okay. So we self-sabotage because of experiences, because we've done it, or we think that our bar is too high, uh-huh. so that we don't want to do these ones because it's never going to catch up with these.
That's right.
In reality, it does. But the problem is we have to learn how to lower the bar.
Right. Right. Which you said is not an easy thing to do, but that it's not an impossible thing to do either.
It's not impossible when you know that that's what it is. When you're aware that it's the chemistry. Like, for instance, if you have a daughter, my daughter was young. She started wanting to watch a scary movie when she was like 7 or 8. It was like a cartoon, right? Uh-huh. You're sitting there going, it's you know, cartoon, but she's excited, right? And then by the time she's 16, she's like watching Insidious. You know, it's like the bar keeps going up, right? She's not going to watch this cartoon anymore, you know? It's the same thing in everything we do. And so when we come back, specifically people come back, we have to like sort of take yourself out of you, right? And then watch from perspective what is actually happening. Mm-hmm. Your soul is asking for something. It's like Julius Caesar back in the day, and it was like sitting like this, and you do something, it's like, you know, not good.
Yeah, thumbs up or thumbs down. Yeah, that type of thing. Yeah.
And that's why we do dumb shit, and we want to drink and then go driving 100 miles an hour, because we want that thrill. It's all a chemistry thing. And it's the same thing we do to get people to surprise. So in business, when we try to get, you know, people that listen to us or have an emotional connection about something. Remember, we only remember negative emotional situations easily. and it outweighs the positive. It's like anything negative will remember. Positive, it has to be great to remember it.
And it makes sense that from an evolution standpoint, because you want to do a whole lot less of the negative stuff, or have a lot less of that negative stuff happen to you, because that's how you survive. And the good stuff, well, yeah, it's good. Maybe it feels good. It's enjoyable, pleasurable, whatever word you want to put to it. It doesn't ensure your survival, right? Yeah. So that makes a whole lot of sense that you would do that. But, you know, there's a whole lot of things that you can point out and notice that bar keeps getting higher and higher and higher. When my kids were young, the toys that they had were all super loud, flashing lights, all that type of thing, right? I remember, you know, growing up as a kid, we had like Lincoln Logs and, you know,
dirt.
Yeah, go outside and play in the dirt
exactly.
Go ride your bike or, you know, something like that. Yeah. I mean, yeah, sure, there might have been some things that made a little bit of noise, or, you know, maybe it had a bell or something like that on it, but it wasn't like anything flashy and bright and loud. And some of these things, I mean, you couldn't shut them up because they were so loud, right? And I think it's like, hey, marketing team, or, you know, product team in whatever toy company, we're getting outsold by the competition. So let's make our thing louder and flasher than the other guys. And then the kids get drawn to that. And then someone else makes it even flashier and louder. And then they get drawn to that. And then eventually you've got stuff that's like, as a parent, it was unbearable to like watch them play with some of these toys, because they're awful. And the same thing with like cartoons, like the bright colors, the quick scene transitions. We didn't have any of that crap when we were kids. We had like Bugs Bunny and, you know, that type of stuff. That, I mean, those were as kind of low tech as they got as far as cartoons go, I think. But that's the difference, is like that bar over the years just kept getting raised higher and higher and higher, and needing to be flashier and more colorful and louder and more stimulating. And it's no wonder that kids these days have the attention span of a goldfish. Like they have no attention span these days, and then add social media and all this other crap on top of it, that just makes things even worse, I would imagine, you know? And so, you know, I think, like, to your point, like this is something that happens in many areas of our lives. It's not just combat. It's not just, you know, someone with drugs or other trauma, things like that. It can happen, I mean, even to a young kid just like that, right?
Yeah, you know, one thing I found in the research that I was doing was that there were basically different types of efficiencies around the BMS, right? Just like you knew when you went down to the sandbox, you went down range, there were people there that you knew that may have signed up after 9/11 that should have never been in the military.
Sure.
It's like you had a good mission, you have a good purpose, but your body is not made for it.
Yeah.
Or your mind is not made for it.
Sure.
And so you have a lot of people that went and, you know, didn't do well because of the inability of the body to handle all the chemistry that was going on, you know? And so this machine, the machine was overwhelmed. And so, like, now, like you're saying, it's not just military. You're right. It's not just trauma. Right. I mean, even if you think about the FBI files from back in the early 70s, when they were looking at serial killers, before the word serial killer was invented, all of them were saying, I was bored. It was dull. I needed something that's going to stimulate. I mean, they're saying the same exact things.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm not saying that we're all serial killers. I'm saying that, well, I mean, maybe, no. But what I am saying is,
no,
like,
comment.
It all works. It all works in the same mechanisms. Right, the body is a similar mechanism that works on the, you know, the state of the chemistry and how the mind, that mind is translating it.
Yeah.
Right? So then, if I was starting to look at people, like when we looked at people, I was trying to figure out how to break this thing down, and a few key themes came out. Ambition was one, and complacency and contentment to be kind of the three main things. And so the first category was like low ambition and complacent. And so I was like, well, where the hell did we think about those kind of people? And it occurred to me that when we graduate high school, we look around at our peers and we make judgment calls. And we're like, oh, they're going to go do this. Highly ambitious, smart. They're a go-getter, right? And you have that whole extreme spectrum, and then you end up with the people that are like, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm just going to work at the store and do nothing, right? And everyone judged that too. Everyone judged. We didn't know why. When you're that young, you don't know why. You're kind of like, we're kind of immature. We base it on different criteria of, social status and all that kind of stuff.
Well, yeah, we kind of have an idea of what success looks like, and someone with no ambition who's just going to float through life, that kind of looks like not a very successful person. But I guess it really depends on what your definition of success is. If that's what the person wants, then that's good. They're good to go and they're
Well, you're
successful.
talking about human success.
Okay, yeah, sure.
So let's pin on that. And it's kind of unfair to say you're talking. Of course, you're talking about human stuff. We're human. All we know is to be human,
Yeah,
right?
right.
But if you think of it this way for a minute, right? You go to the next stage. It's the ambitious people. The people that went to be doctors, lawyers, engineers, computer science, but whatever. You're gonna go do something. You want the better car. You want the bigger house. You want to grow in life. You want to do cool things. You have this thing. There's varying degrees of that, right? Then you have the people. That's where the third category of extreme is a drug. Those are the people that did all things like, I like to race motorcycles. I did that when I got back from the military. You race cars. You do anything that causes adrenaline. You want people to go skydiving, scuba diving, whatever it may be. It's that. Also, you go to combat. You come back. You still need that chemistry. You're chasing that situation in your mind, the way your mind handled it. And so we can never find it because we don't have that same stimuli to create that chemistry. That's why we do crazy dumb shit, because we're looking for it and we don't know why. Now that you know why, go do something that's safer, that's dumb shit, and maybe you'll get the chemistry, right? But also think of it, the bar's up here. Okay, do I need to throw everything away and start again down here to go to the bar? No. Some people stayed in the military or stayed in contracting because that's all they're going to know, man. Their souls are lost, right? But then you have people that are just missing it and it's driving them crazy. All you got to do is figure out this delta. And that's what I help them do. I help people figure out you got to throw away the baby with the bathwater, or you just got to figure out this delta. And let's capture that or lower the bar to make you to bring them back, right? The last group is the people that are gone, like long-term abuse, acute abuse, or maybe just your body's broken. You were born that way. Some people were born with no arms. Maybe the person's born without the chemistry to satisfy their soul. So they're constantly looking for stuff, right? So when we look at that, what I found was that you have these categories, but really the first category that we judge the most is the most efficient mind-body system with the soul. They don't need much and they get more than enough happiness. Meanwhile, us schmucks are sitting there busting our asses to do what we need to do to get more, to get more, to get more. And we may or may not be content. Who knows what will happen? Who do you think's the smart person?
Exactly. I think, not busting your ass to get the same results, I think is probably a good idea, right?
Yeah, sure, they're going to have problems. I mean, we all have problems,
Everyone
right?
does, yeah.
They have like, they're going to have, they can't go on the vacations we go on or whatever that may be, but they're still living a life. They're still happy. They just want to do their job, come home, eat dinner with the family, watch the game, go to the kids, games or whatever, and that's it. They don't care about anything else. Turns out they're the most efficient. They've been dealt the best hand. And we look at it in reverse.
Exactly, because we see the Instagram highlight reel of people's lives where that's everyone's showing their flashy cars, their flashy outfits, their flashy whatever fancy vacations that they're taking and all that, and that's we look at that like now that's my bar that I got to get to, because now I'm comparing myself to that person instead of looking at myself and saying, what is it that I really want? Not like, how do I compete with that? What do I need? You know, what do
we're targeting? We're targeting a thing rather than happy.
Yeah.
And that's kind of interesting because for instance, in Buddhism or Shaolin monks, right? They say, by the way, there's this thing, a vacation you can take. It's called monk for a month.
Okay.
You got to check it out. I was like this close. And I was like, look, I'm already bald. It's not going to matter. They're going to shave me. All right, cool. And you go to Nepal for 3 weeks and you do monk stuff, which is basically sweeping the floor with a decrepit broom. That's about it. And then, you know, didn't go though. But, you know, the monks believe they want peace. They're striving for peace, right? And that sounds good, but I'll tell you, it's wrong. It's not why the soul is in your body for your life. Now, whether you believe in reincarnation, whether you believe there's a huge ass line trying to get into heaven, whatever you believe in, okay. But the soul coming into a body has to have a reason. Like, what does a soul have in a body that doesn't have on its own?
The experiences that...
And why?
Yeah. Well, why do we have the experiences? Is that what the question is? Or?
Yeah.
I don't know.
So, you know, outside of this space time, like imagine like a tube, right? And inside the tube, there's material able to be formed.
Okay.
Okay. The thing that creates this tube is the quantum physics programming that creates space and allows, like a scaffold, allows for things to stand on, right? So material is allowed.
Okay.
Time happens to also be there. The only reason to have time is to have mortality.
Okay.
There's no other reason to have time. Mortality, we have this thing of mortality is that when we're in a body, now we can have that experience, like you said.
Yeah.
And as a human in particular, we have a whole list of emotions that we understand as humans. So dogs have them, cats have them, you know, they get angry, they get anxious, they get happy, same thing, right? So for us, we have all these emotions that get or this chemistry that's translated to emotion. The soul on its own does not. When did the research on near-death experiences, the common thread across everything is that they were saying, I was at peace. I don't know how to explain it. And the reason they were at peace is because they didn't have a body at the time. Interesting. They were outside the body.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know what that feels like particularly, but the peace concept means that there is no up or down or side left to right. It's your center, right? Which is what the Shaolin monks are trying to do.
Okay.
They're trying to just be at peace. No happy, no sad. They say that. So while that seems interesting, you're cheating your soul as to why it's here.
Sure.
And you're going to have enough time when you die to be at peace. You're not going to remember anything.
And that actually sounds kind of, in a way, kind of awful to just be kind of neutral, not super happy, not angry, or, you know, any frustrated, any of those negative kind of emotions. And no, just, you're just kind of baseline neutral. I don't know. Like, to me, that just seems like a miserable way to go about life. Like, you don't get to experience any joy or happiness. You also don't get to experience any sadness. So something happens to a loved one, what are you just gonna like, oh well, I guess that sucks, oh well, you know, not a big, and it's not have any emotion about it. Like, that doesn't seem like the right way to go either. And I think, again, because, you know, to what you were just saying, there's a soul somewhere inside of me. You know, it may be very dark and, you know, hard to find at times, but it's in there, and it's craving some sort of experiences out there in the world. And some of those experiences are going to be good. Some of them not so good. And, but it wants all of them, and it wants to take in all those things, right?
Yep. It wants that the feeling of emotion is really what it wants. That's what satisfies the soul. You hear that all the time. You know, soup for the soul, or what satisfies a soul, or, you know, people say like, I'm going to leave my job because I don't feel satisfied anymore. So they quit their tech job and to open up a flower shop. It's like, is that really what, you know, or are you just missing the bar? Like, how far away from that bar are you? So, you know, it's really about awareness of what's happening in that BMS system, that body, mind, soul system, and how efficiency gain, you know, how that actually determines how you're going to feel about things. Like, you can feel something about something, but it might not be the same feeling. Like, if we do the same thing, you may have a different feeling about it. That's nature, nurture, you know, a lot of different things that go into it.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, we're our human path, like our human existence is to, you know, some people say have experience and learn lessons. I believe in that myself. Other everyone can have their own thing, but your human purpose is different than your soul's purpose. The soul's purpose here is to have emotion.
Okay.
Now, what you do for the human life to get that is up to you, right? But here's the next question. Does it even matter? Like,
I don't know.
Are we expendable to the soul? Like, I'm gone in like 80 years. What's right. it mean to the soul?
And will that, I guess the question then is, will that soul, if it still is needing something, will it go inhabit some other flesh taxon?
We don't know. Yeah, I mean, well, that's a whole, in my book, I talk about that a little bit facetiously where I'm like, okay, look, depending on what you believe, there's a lot of serious questions around here. Because if you believe in like reincarnation, okay, then you're saying that your soul is distinct to you, your mutually exclusive soul.
Yeah.
Which also means that back in the beginning of time, when there were like 100 people, there were only 100 souls. How did we get from 100 to 8 billion?
Yeah, right.
Is there like a soul making machine? You know, someone's cranking out like a meat grinder, getting souls out.
Or are we just taking a piece of a soul, you know?
Like the world has gone to shit.
Yeah, right. We need to thin the herd a little, maybe.
And, I know, right? We need to thin the herd so our souls are more full in the grand scheme of things, so that we have more. You know, we have better people. Oh, that would be an interesting.
That's.
That would be a movie right there, man.
I that didn't come from me. I don't want any royalties. I don't want anything to do with that because I don't want anyone actually thinning the herd, thinking that that's going to actually make any changes in this world. Don't do that.
Yeah, let's not do that.
Let's not advertise that as a viable option here.
Does it matter? Like, does the soul care ultimately when we die what we've done?
Well, I don't know. Like, if this is kind of interesting discussion, and when you have a soul, like you said, the soul wants experiences, and that's why it's inhabited inside of our bodies, and we are able to move it around and take it and experience different things and do different things, and some of them good, some of them bad. Well, I guess the question then is, like, why does that soul want that? Like, is it like kind of like a like in a video game where you have like a power up and the more experience you have, like the higher up that level gets, and you know, at the end of your days, you want that experience level to be as high as it possibly can be, so that way it's at peace when you go. Maybe that's part of that peace, is balancing out. I want a lot of goods and I want a lot of negatives, and we can balance that out in the end, you know, and you do a final tally of all the experiences that you've had. I don't know. Like, there's that's beyond my pay grade, I think.
you talk to an older person. I remember I talked to my 90-year-old grandmother when she was dying, and she was like, I'm ready to go. Like, I've seen too many things over and over again. I was like, huh, that stuck with me.
Yeah, sure.
Like, over and over again. That was kind of key. It's like, you've seen it enough times, you kind of like, I'm done with this.
It's almost like watching the same movie over and over again. It's like, you know what? It was good the first time, but
Groundhog Day.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. But yeah.
So imagine this bar on Groundhog Day. Every day, in the middle of the movie, he was just feeling more and more and more depressed because he knew what was going to happen. So there was no chemistry to excite him.
Right. Right.
He tried to kill himself how many times, right?
Yeah.
Until a point where he decided, I'm going to try to create the chemistry. Really. He was trying to change what was happening. And he was going after something that created the chemistry, the relationship with.
I'm not going to remember her name either. It's been a while since I've seen that, but I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, so the chemistry, he was actually creating the chemistry that was changing his memory, that was changing the scenario, that made him happy. That's almost like a great example. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah,
I like
well,
that.
that was an accident, so I'm glad I brought it up too, because
Yeah, all right.
it just accidentally came out and triggered something in you. But again, that's an experience, right? And that's how did we react? I had no intention of bringing up Groundhog Day, but I just was talking about a generic movie that we've all seen a movie probably more than once and maybe several times, and maybe that you really like the movie the first time, but then the more you watch it, maybe you start to. It starts to wear on you, and then
Yeah.
maybe it's not quite as good anymore the fifth or sixth time, or at least the experience isn't as good because you know what's going to happen already. So it's not like that moment in the movie that's going to shock you or surprise you or scare you, that the murderer is coming out around the corner and he stabs a person or whatever. Like it's going to happen, so doesn't have the same effect that it did the first time around. That's really all I was talking about, but that triggered something in you that made you think Groundhog Day, and you went
Yeah.
down that road, and which is fine. But again, it's an experience that we shared here. Now we're sharing it with the listeners too. But and people who are listening to this, they're probably thinking of movies that maybe they have seen that over and over again, and now they have that in their mind. And so it's kind of interesting how we can paint a picture in somebody's mind without even realizing it. Even when you read a book, you're looking at black and white letters on a page, right? And somehow you can visualize the red barn that's off in the grassy meadow with the blue sky and the trees in the background and the tire swing off the tree on the side. Right now you have all those colors, those vivid
But it's not the
pictures.
same as yours.
Right, because my tree might be on the right side of the barn. Yours might be on the left. Your tree might be a little closer, and your barn might have some shingles falling off the roof or something. And whatever it is, like you've created something different in your mind. And as an author of a book, I couldn't possibly know what everybody who's going to read the book is going to create in their mind. They've all created a different version of that story. None of them necessarily wrong. But they're all different just because it all came from their imagination, their own perspectives, right?
Yeah. And what you just explained around the going over and over again looking for that surprise,
Sure, yeah.
that's a way of saying that a real reversal of emotion from chemistry. Surprise is like you're going to have a great surprise, you're going to go down low and then spike up, or you're going from a horrible surprise, you're up there and you're spiking down. So it's like that
Yeah.
turnaround. That's one of the main reasons when we come back from, the military, we have problems because we're looking for a lot of that. The chaos is that. That's what it's just constant, one after another, simultaneously just going like crazy. And so your mind needs that to operate, feel at home because your bar's high.
Right. Now you were talking earlier about helping people figure out that little delta between the bar and how to get them back down to bring that bar down, I guess. What does that entail? What kind of process is that to do that? Is this like a in-depth process, or is this something r rather, I don't want to say simple because that's not the right word, but is this something that people can figure out, and manage this, or is this a pretty complex process to bring this bar down?
Once you understand that you are in a machine, and just like a car, you got oil, you got gas, you got water, antifreeze, windshield wiper, transmission fluid, you got a whole bunch of brake fluid, you got a whole bunch of fluids in your body doing different things. You got a lot of the mechanics, right? When something breaks, you look at the machine to fix the machine. We don't just start pushing the gas pedal harder if you've got low oil and you're gonna blow a cylinder, right? You're gonna blow a head gasket, right? And a lot of people do that. Why? Because they're not aware of what's happening. So what I first do is get them to be aware of what actually are we doing here? Like, who are you in the sense of, hey, this is a body. I got a mind inside. The brain is the brain, but the mind is like the software that makes sense of it all.
Okay.
All the experiences that we have scientifically, you know, like, all right, there's the hippie moon bat thing of like, oh, everything's energy, man. Yeah, there's that. And then there's the real science part of it, which is everything is actually, I mean, it's literally in a pool of energy that we're walking around. For me to see you, that means there has to be photons in the area. For you to hear me, that means there has to be air in the area. Even space, you know, voided space has quantum material coming in and out of existence constantly. Nothing is empty. We just think it is because our bodies are limited. We have a limitation in our senses. That limitation is the beauty, is the blessing of how we can have the experience that we do. Imagine if you were to be able to pick up like every single signal of everything. It'd be nuts.
It'd be chaos. Yeah.
So the limitation that we have is the blessing that we have. So we can have this experience. All right, that put aside, then I talk about, okay, here's the machinery. Here's your understanding of your biochemistry. Here's why when you hear a snap go by your head, at first you were like, what the hell was that? And then you were ducking. And then at one point, you just stood there because you're like, that's not going to hit me.
Right.
Right. When yep. you had enough rounds go by you and nothing hit you, at one point, you're like, these guys suck. They're shooting with AK standing up like this. I mean, no.
Yeah. Good luck. Yeah.
Yeah. So when you go through that process of getting them to understand it, I go through all the stories and break it down in a very simple, you know, understandable way to correlate what's happening at that level to everyday things that we've been doing.
Okay.
And why those things that we do happen the way they are, and what does that really mean? So once I go through those sections, then we get into the part of saying, okay, especially with veterans, it's very hard to tell them to you know, breathe out for 8 seconds. They're like, what are we doing? You know, nobody wants to hear, you know, mindfulness or anything. But all I'm trying to show them is that you can control your inner chemistry. You can. And there's different ways, you know, there's different systems, the parasympathetic system, you've got the autonomous, there's all these different systems in your body. There's one in particular that manages the adrenaline and cortisol. That's the parasympathetic, right? So we go through things that help them understand that if you do this thing, it's going to lower these metrics down, heart rate, blood pressure. It allows your chemistry to flood, go through, disseminate, and then go away. And you're right back at homeostasis, right? So if people understand how the body, how their particular body works, then they can start learning techniques on how to manage the chemistry. And once you can manage the chemistry, you can lower your bar.
Interesting. Yeah, and I like the analogy that you used with a car, with all the different fluids that are in a car. And you know, if you don't replace the oil, then, you know, you're going to have problems. So you don't put gas in the car, you're going to have problems. You can have no gas in the car and you can have your pedal all the way down to the floor and it's not going anywhere because there's no gas. Yeah. The car's not, good luck, you can't even turn the car on at that point, right? And so you're going to have all sorts of problems and you have to keep all of those things in check and you have to make sure. That's why there's a fuel gauge on your dash, right? So you can tell, like, okay, when the fuel's getting low, we got to go fill back up and we got to do something to make sure that we have enough fuel in the car. You know, you get a little warning light that when the oil needs to be changed or something, you know, those types of things help as for a driver, help you know that there's something wrong, something needs to change. You got to do some sort of action. Unfortunately, humans don't come with a dashboard with fancy flashy lights and gauges and all that. So you got to have to know your own body, right? And you know, we all produce these chemicals in different quantities. We may require them in different quantities. You know, just like a car, one car may need more gas to drive 10 miles than another car may need.
Less efficient.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So some people, you know, inside their bodies may be less efficient. They may need to create more or
now, less. I want to take that example because that's a great example.
Okay.
You have a Ferrari with a V12 engine.
Yeah.
Exciting. fucking loud. You hit that gas pedal, ooh. But you're going to use a gallon to get to McDonald's.
Right.
Versus, you know, your grandma with a four-cylinder can go 60 miles a gallon on that thing, right?
Yeah.
More efficient. The people that we may think are boring or not as ambitious or any of those metrics that we had more efficient cars in the relationship of the car being the body.
Yeah, right.
It's the same thing.
It is. And I like that analogy. That makes a lot of sense. And so when you've been operating at real high levels, you know, use your grandma's car example that you were just saying. If you were driving that thing, you know, 90, 100 miles an hour, you know, that engine's getting hot, right? And it's going to need some time to slow down and bring it back down to a level that it can drive, right? And that's not going to be, you know, real good for the car to keep doing that. So, you know, just like grandma's car, we're going to need to take some time off and maybe take a step back and reset ourselves so that we can be okay with not going 1,000 miles an hour with their hair on fire and, you know, jumping out of planes and doing all the craziness. If we want that more peaceful, we're going to have to allow that bar to come down, right?
Well, imagine everyone here in the U.S. that didn't go in the military, didn't go to combat, has like a car with all the instrument panels and all the lights.
Yeah, yeah.
It'll tell you, you know, anything's wrong. We had our car, we went to combat, we came back. Car's blown to shit. No instrument panel. I've got a 69 Bronco, no warning lights. Actually, my fuel gauge isn't even hooked up. And so I have to knock on the fuel tank to hear, like, do I have gas in here? I fill it up whenever I go out just to make sure. This is a big V8 engine in a truck with no fuel gauge that, you know, goes fast. But I don't know anything what's going on. Yeah. So imagine you're driving this car. You have to use a whole nother set of instruments to see if something's wrong.
Right.
Right? Before you wouldn't smell the car. But you know, if it smells like pancake, it feels like a hotcake syrup, it's probably your antifreeze that's leaking somewhere, your radiator's leaking somewhere. If you notice, you know, is it getting really hot, or do you hear like a vacuum sound? Is you got a leak in the vacuum somewhere? You know, you're looking under the ground in your garage, you see some leaks going on. You didn't know you were running out of oil, but you probably, you know, you should probably get something fixed, right?
Sure.
You have to change. I had to change all the ways that I look at a car to identify problems because the car has no instrument panel anymore. It only has a speedometer, that's it. That's the problem that we have when we come back. Our instrument panel is blown out of control. The way we look at our bodies, we don't even look at our bodies as a body anymore. We're just us in a shitty situation and everything sucks. And no one knows what I'm doing. No one understands who I am. Everything's dull. I need to find something or I'm going to go crazy. That's driving without looking at your dashboard, not even knowing what to look for.
Right. And to your point with, you know, a vehicle like the one that you were just describing, where you don't have any dashboard lights or fuel gauge or any of that kind of stuff, and you need to use other cues to let you know when something's wrong, you know, tapping on the gas tank to see, you know, is there fuel in here? If there's a leak of oil on the ground, okay, well, something needs to be fixed. And not to say that you can't do those things if you did have the dash, but those things makes it a little bit more obvious for you, right? But, you know, our bodies are more like more closely aligned to the vehicle that you were just talking about, where we don't have the dash and we have to pay attention to other things. And that's easier said than done, I think.
It is. Yeah. That's like kind of the main reason in terms of what I do with the coaching and the helping is around understanding how to, you know, how to peer into your body.
Yeah.
Like you can reduce your heart rate and your blood pressure just by thinking about your heart and doing a scan. You can, you know, I put military, you know, I put vets to task about how tough they are.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of do a little bit of psychological, a little playing with that, just to kind of get them to say, you know what, you can do this. Don't, you don't have to
Yeah,
back away
right.
from this, unless you can't. It's okay. It's not meant for everyone, But they, you get to a point where we have to get a better grip around how our body and our BMS functions. Once you know that, once you understand that trio, that efficiency, you can control it. Or you could do things to not let it control you, is probably a better way of saying it.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Because when you're so focused on the external things, you aren't focused on internal. Like maybe there could be something that I'm doing instead of everything happened to me. That's external, right? Those are external
Right.
things that have happened to me, and that's what's controlling me at this point, versus the opportunity to fix it and control it yourself. That talk about like Jocko podcast, he's talking about extreme ownership. I mean, that's pretty extreme right there, is figuring out how to control the way your body creates chemicals that make you either happy or sad, or any of the various emotions that you may be having, figuring out how to control those, and then you can control your own levels of happiness.
You
And
can. I mean, think of it. Go give your daughter a hug for 30 seconds.
yeah.
You get oxytocin.
Yeah.
You can control chemistry in your body if you know how.
Right.
That's a great
You're not
idea.
going to be pissed off at the
Right.
situation after doing that, right? You're not going to be, oh
Yeah.
man, I've just wasted 30 seconds of my life. God, I hate this. You're not going to be angry about it. So at a minimum, you're going to be like neutral, but I gotta imagine you'd be kind of happy, that you had that opportunity, right?
There's a couple things that I about what you were just saying is pretty interesting. One is, I saw this billboard sign somewhere in back home, and it stuck with me ever since. It said, "Life doesn't happen to you; it happens because of you."
Yeah, sure.
Situational environments you put yourself in, or you don't take yourself out of. All right, and I had a posting about that. Like, I'm gonna do a little bit of a reel or another or a show about that, around what is a situational environment is and how do you get yourself out of that. And usually, especially vets who look at drugs or alcohol, and it's kind of like, well, my friends were drinking. Well, why are you still hanging out with those friends? So there's.
Yeah, you can take that to an extreme too, because let's I saw a study that took place with Vietnam soldiers who were over in Vietnam, and they were doing all sorts of drugs over in Vietnam. When they were home, before they went to Vietnam, they never did any drugs. But when they got to Vietnam, they started doing all sorts of stuff. And when they came back, they stopped doing drugs. They were taken out of the environment where there were those people who were doing those things that influenced them to do it more, because hey, everybody's doing it, I might as well just join in, kind of thing. And when you're in that environment back home, yeah, you might have friends who are drinking or doing drugs or whatever. It doesn't mean that you have to. You can find other friends. And if everybody that you know in your area, because you live in a shitty area, is doing that kind of stuff, well, move. Like there are things that you can do. It's not like the world is out to get you. You can move. You can get away from these types of environments if you choose to. Hell, change your phone number and move. And these people aren't going to follow you, and they're not going to bother you. And you can find a better place to live. You can find other people to hang out with, and but that's if you want to. I think you have to have that desire, right?
The desire, the need, and the thing is, people don't change. They usually don't, unless there is extreme pain, right? And so, unless there's physical, mental, or emotional, and if you want to look at how there's a science behind that, just look at boot camp. Look at the timing, the cycle timing of how they talk to you, how they communicate with you over boot camp. I mean, think about it. There's a push down, and there's a gradual curve, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, instead of yelling at you, they're starting to, kind of commend you for some of the things that you're doing right. That's not by accident. That's purpose built. So pain, physical, mental, or emotional, even with that, people that hit rock bottom don't always change because their chemistry's off. Some bodies, they're not gonna be able to change on that. But usually people don't change altruistically. It's usually because of a purpose that's painful enough for them. You lose your loved ones, you lose something, doesn't matter what it is. If it hurts, you're gonna change.
Yeah.
So if they wanna make that change, you gotta first look deep inside and say, is the pain strong enough for me to wanna make that change?
Mm-hmm.
Gotta be honest with yourself on that.
Yeah. And if it's not, what is it you're trying to get out of it? You know, do you actually want to change? And if you do, you might need to dig down deep and figure out what that reason is. Why do you want to change? What will be better if you do make that change? And what's not going as well as you want it to right now before that change? And how do you make that work? So yeah, you can do a lot of things with that. It's interesting. All this stuff really just boils down to, what do we want? Do we want this change to happen? Do we want to bring that bar down? Do we want to constantly be living where we're going 100 miles an hour, you know, going crazy, you know? Or,
and some people do.
Yeah. And they might, right. And so some people might listen to this, might be like, well, yeah, I do. So, you know,
yeah,
I guess
and
I'm
that's
good.
Great.
Yeah.
But the message there is like that it's not one is better than the other.
Sure.
It's knowing where you are.
Yeah.
Because when you know where you are, you can put yourself in an environment that's going to help you.
Yeah.
You can pick the right kind of mate. If you're super ambitious or treat them as a drug and you're picking someone who doesn't want to do anything, you're probably going to have some problems.
Sure.
So, you know, it has a lot of impact. One of my friends who read the book, she told me when she was in it, she goes, you lost me in the science part, but then after the science part, I understood why you had to say the science part.
Yeah.
And then she said, she said, I chuckled when you talked about the skydiving thing because she did it. She goes, and then I started wondering, where am I in life?
Mm.
Thank you. Right. So it was pretty cool that she had that insight in there. But, you know, at the end of the day, do people want to change? And, you know, there is it's you doing it. It's you putting the control in your hands. And it's great for entrepreneurs. It's great for people that are having problems. It's great for people who have friends or people that they hang out with that cause problems because they're still in those situations, right?
Yeah, sure.
So there's a lot of kind of tertiary and secondary impacts there.
Right. And, you know, any positive change that is made in your own individual life can ripple out into other folks' lives as well as they start to see, hey, he's making these changes and he seems to be, you know, doing better. You know,
yeah.
I want that, you know, and you know, that could have that ripple effect to affect other people in a positive way. So the book, again, A Soul Spoke to Me, Soul's Guide to Navigate Purpose is the book. For the listeners, is there any place that you would like to direct them to, you know, websites or social media, anything like that, that they can check you out, find out more information about you and what you do, the kind of coaching to help them bring that bar down, or, you know, other stuff that might be of interest?
Yeah, thanks, Scott. So yeah, you can follow me I'm on Instagram. It's Mark Haddad Author. You can just look that up and you'll find it. And I'm dropping notes. I'll be starting to put some talks on there where I talk about parts of chapters. It's a short book. It's about 90 pages,
okay,
but it's pretty deep. So people have to read it over and over again because they're trying to wonder, hey, how am I, you know, I get people to get out of their own heads and sit over here looking at themselves.
Okay.
And so to think about that and the things that we talked about is a little challenging, but I've gotten some pretty good feedback on that. Good stuff. So I'll be launching some videos and, you know, live sessions there. Also markitoutauthor.com. So you can go there and see some, you know, some other information and figure out how to get the book. You know, I'll be doing some additional podcasts talking about, you know, the applications of that. And I am launching a website called Land Nav for the Soul, obviously. it's a military-based navigation. I thought it had a nice little ring to it
sure.
in terms of that. But I was like, ah, we're probably going to knock out all the Navy guys because, you know, they're not going to know.
Yeah, right. They're not going to know land nav.
So maybe just nav for the solar power.
Right, right.
But in this site, it basically takes you through a little deeper sense of the book in terms of how you can apply things. It has a very quick assessment around how you feel in situations. And then it has an ability, it helps you identify where you fit in those categories. And it helps you to journal and okay. write about things that are going on. So you can actually, you know, create an account. You're putting information in there. It's totally secure. No one's seeing anything, not even myself. I'm not reading any depth in there. But what it does, it comes back with things you can do. Like actual, whether it's breathing control, whether it's getting out of a situation, whether it's doing other things, it comes back with real scientific activities that you could do to lower your chemistry reaction to things.
Okay.
And so that's usually what happens after you talk to me, because before you're kind of like, what am I doing here? How does this even make sense? You know,
yeah.
I don't believe in that. You know, it's like, oh, so your way is working, right?
Yeah.
Is that why you're here?
Yeah. Now? Right.
Okay. Yeah.
And, you know, you're talking about how people kind of have to, or will, with the book, they'll kind of step outside of themselves and kind of have that outside look in. It almost sounded like one of those out of body experiences, you know, near death experience kind of thing.
Yeah, try not to die doing it.
Yeah, don't do that. Man, this book killed, you know. But no, definitely don't do that. But it's. You know, helpful to, you know, kind of look at it from in somebody else's shoes, or look at it from an outside point of view, maybe not necessarily somebody else's shoes, but from a different point of view than what, because sometimes you just get stuck and you got tunnel vision and you can't see it from any other way. And, you know, couldn't be further from the truth. There's a lot of different perspectives out there. And
yeah, we need each other. I hope I can help some people.
Absolutely. Well, these links, your Instagram and your website, I'm going to put both of those in the show notes for the listeners. And so they can reach out and check out your book. Definitely, again, A Soul Spoke to Me, A Soul's Guide to Navigate Purpose is the name of the book. Go get a copy of the book and reach out to Mark and get his insights and wisdom, and hopefully can help get you back on the right track, lower that bar a little bit so you're not constantly going at 110 miles an hour and hair on fire and all that kind of crap, so you can you can go back and you can have a normal life, you know, if that's what you're looking for. You know, again, not everyone's looking for that. Some people want to be, you know, overly ambitious or, you know, going crazy. So, you know,
if at least you enjoy life at that point.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I guess the call to action is if you're feeling out of control and you want to bring that bar back down, then yeah, definitely reach out, get a copy of the book, even get a copy of the book anyways, because there may be some people in your life who might be seeming like they're getting out of control a little bit too. And maybe they need some help and, you know, you might be able to help guide them in the right direction. So get a copy of the book and check out the website. Get in touch with Mark if you want to kind of go down that path. But Mark, man, thank you so much for this conversation. It really has been eye-opening, you know, eye-opening view into the soul, I guess, is a good way to put it. Maybe that'll be the title of the episode. But definitely a great conversation. Really do appreciate all the work that you're doing. Appreciate you for your service. And thank you for coming on and sharing everything with us today.
Thanks, Scott. Appreciate it.
You bet.
Thank you.